Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about a bunch of announcements that Google has just made for India. Now, Google is claiming to be an India-first company which is launching several features of Android and other services targeted at India. Now, this includes Google Maps, which just came out with a two-wheeler mode, and it also launched a bunch of other things such as Oreo Go, designed for phones with less RAM and really low resources, basically extremely low-end budget phones. So to talk about this, we have our games editor, that's Rishi Alwani.
Greetings, people. And on the topic of Google, yes, a couple of things which we're not going to discuss is the fact that you can't get YouTube on your Fire Stick. That's like a global thing. And we're also not going to discuss the glorious Pixel 2 price drops because you can read about them on gadgets360.com.
And we also have our Android enthusiast and reviewer, that's Aditya Shenoy. And he's not going to go off topic in his introduction.
Hello. Yeah.
It's all Google. It's all on topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nope.
Okay, cool then. So first and most important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is this two-wheeler mode for Google Maps. Because in India, navigation is a big issue. And Google Maps is, I think, the market leader right now in terms of that. This two-wheeler mode is of great importance because unlike in many other developed countries, in India, you have a lot of narrow lanes and a lot of roads where you wouldn't want to take your truck or even your car because it's, you know, really tiny and really narrow. So now Google Maps, when you go into the two-wheeler mode, it offers you several shortcuts. So I'll let the resident biker take over at this point.
Okay. So I think it's a good feature. Now, I do remember Google Maps asking me to drive through a really narrow lane wherein my car mirrors were actually touching packet of chips from shops that were on either sides. And that was one experience after which I kind of stopped using Google Maps. This was like probably 4 years back. And now that, it kind of figures out that this road is not wide enough for a car to go through easily, it kind of dedicates that only to two-wheeler mode. So when you engage navigation with two-wheelers, so that is when it'll use those kind of roads. There are a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, in a car, you can basically mount the phone on the windscreen and keep checking. But on the bike, it's really hard. So I don't know how people are going to use navigation as a, you know, while riding on the bike, because there's no easy way of getting it. You cannot use it in one hand while you're riding the bike. Not that you're supposed to do it when you're driving, but that's what I think some people do.
I think they're going to mount it on that speedometer, right?
No, there's no way of...
I mean, this is actually quite true. This brings a massive ergonomic problem here.
Yeah, so you'll need something like a RAM mount to be mounted so that you can...
Or
do they sell helmets with Android?
No.
it's called Daydream.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, let's be honest here. Aditya brings up a very valid point. While this is actually a pretty cool feature in theory, in practice it's going to be amusing to see what people do, because I won't be surprised if until bike and motorcycle manufacturers decide to allow you to have space for dedicated mount. I won't be surprised in the interim where we have people strapping on the phones to their arms or their wrists to check where they're going, much like how runners do before the Apple Watch existed. I mean, so it's going to be interesting to see how that works in the interim. That aside, it also goes to show that Google's confident enough that it's on its satellite telemetry to show off narrower lanes, which is interesting because I think not more than a couple of years ago, we've actually had reports. In fact, our own site covered a story where one of our editors at the time had a near life and death accident using Google Maps while on a road trip.
Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. The person in question just got lost pretty badly in some town in North India, which we were supposed to bypass on the way to Delhi.
Yeah. So that's my point. If they're confident enough to launch a two-wheeler product that requires a lot more accuracy on their part, it seems that they're confident enough and that they've taken the right strides. But again, like Aditya said, how it pans out is going to be fun.
Yeah, and
to
we've already seen reports of people saying that, I mean, this is from Twitter, so don't take every cream with a pinch of salt, but this has happened to us as well. So yeah, lots of places where it's actually a one way and a lot of bikers take the wrong route, like go against the direction of traffic, which is not allowed. Google Maps now suggests that as a shortcut to get to your place, which is, this is a problem that I have personally seen as well, like even when driving a car. So yeah, it's not like, you know, it doesn't exist, but it's just a matter of maybe Google optimizing its algorithms to find these one ways faster.
Yeah, because currently what I do is whenever I'm on the bike traveling, I kind of have navigation on, and it gives me navigation and turn-by-turn updates on the watch. So the Android Wear is kind of, it's more convenient because I can just glance and it'll tell me how to go around the route. And that is something I think Google, I think you've completely forgotten about Android Wear that exists as well. Where you know, it'll be convenient to bikers as well, wherein you can use it to check if there's an important message while you're stationary at a traffic light, because it's really inconvenient to get the phone out, because you'll have to get your gloves off, unlock the phone, and then kind of go through all your stuff.
Yeah, so this feature becomes relevant hopefully in the near future when like petrol and diesel powered two-wheelers are on the wane and we start to see electric ones come in. Because what that allows for is essentially having one touchscreen-like thing on the dashboard itself, where you will see the speed, where you will see navigation, everything. So once that happens, this will be a lot more relevant. But until then, it's going to be a bit risky to be using this, or you know, maybe Google ties up with manufacturers, bike manufacturers, and has some kind of a mount integrated into bikes for.
Well, I guess this would mean Android is really Android Go. But one other thing, which I mean, in the interim, assuming Google does decide to realize that Android Wear is relevant, I could foresee a short term situation where you could use your Android wearable to look at where you're going, and under your helmet, you're probably using something similar to a pair of Pixel Buds that actually tells you where to go left, where to go right.
Yeah.
But or, you know, earphones.
Yeah, but then earphones and wires and cables. The future's wire-free, allegedly.
Yeah. So, yeah, the big question here is, where is Android Wear?
Yeah. So, I have no clue what Google has been doing with it because... Yeah. We do have different watch manufacturers coming in, and they have new designs to offer, but whereas there's there's no significant progress when it comes to the tech part. So I'm currently still using a G watch, which is like a first gen product, and it's been serving well, but the options to upgrade are quite expensive and
not worth it.
Exactly.
I mean, when Google doesn't mention Android Wear at Google I/O, then
it kind of shows that, you know, they've kind of letting it die
just
slowly,
forgotten about it entirely now. So navigation is obviously a major part of Google, but then there was another tiny little announcement at yesterday's event, which was Android Oreo Go. So now Android Go is a project that was announced at Google I/O earlier this year in 2017, where Google said that it'll be optimizing Android Oreo for phones with 512 MB of RAM, 1 GB of RAM, with like really low-end hardware.
So to me, this sounds like Google just took Android One, Android Silver, gave them a fake mustache and a pair of glasses and said, hey, here's Android Go.
Yeah, it does sound like that, honestly. But in this case, the only difference is that Google is only focusing on the OS, on the software. It hasn't tied up with the manufacturers and is not like pumping in maybe, I don't know, some crores of rupees into an advertising campaign saying, apni kismat, apne haath, or something similar like that.
I think they've forgotten about that as well.
Entirely.
Oh, so it's basically Android 01 and Android Silver, but after weight loss.
So in this case, I think Google has realized that that those marketing campaigns didn't really pay off because what people really wanted did not... and what Google really wanted at that point, I guess, is to have more control over how Android is distributed and to have faster updates overall. But it somehow, like, that Android One campaign did not succeed, and it's back again trying to penetrate that low-end market. So now, like, a key thing to point out here is that Google has this one team which works on all these features. Which works on all these features for India. So if you remember, like, recently, very, very recently, they launched an app called Datally, or Datally, however you want to pronounce it. Yeah, it's Datally. So it's come from the same unit, which basically optimizes all of these apps for India. So we also had something called YouTube Go, which allowed for offline sharing of videos. Yeah. And now we have a full version of Android itself, which is optimized for these low-end devices.
Because, you know, this is where I'm a little curious, because Android, like you said, Android Go, like Android Oreo Go edition is targeted at low-end smartphones, which is actually a category that is shrinking because you've got devices with 2 gigs of RAM, like the Redmi 5A, which is somewhere around 6,000 rupees, and the earlier 20 million units, if I'm not wrong, is going to be 5,000. And at the same time, you've got smart feature phones, which are somewhere
actually the first 5 million are 5,000 rupees.
Yeah, so they'll be around 5,000 rupees.
Yeah,
and then you have got smart feature phones like the Bharat one and stuff, which are somewhere around 2,200-2,500. So you've got very little like space to play in, because people who would want a feature phone, like a smart feature phone, they might not want to stretch to go to a basic phone, or you know, or even if you'd price a phone somewhere around 3,500 or 4,000 rupees, you have the flexibility to expand your budget a little and go for a device like the Redmi 5A, which has got like enough resources to run the stock version of Android without having to go for the skimmed part.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes Android Go edition like one additional fragmentation that Google could have possibly done without.
Yeah, and honestly, this kind of worries me a bit, because the way Google goes about it is, and especially how they term this to be, is that they term Google Go and the Google Assistant for Android Oreo and Android Oreo Go edition to be lighter and more relevant to the unique needs of the next billion users. Now, I don't know. To me, that just seems a little patronizing for one simple reason. The next billion users want what everyone else wants. And in fact, the next billion users have better data than the first billion users.
Yep.
So I don't understand why Google has to take this patronizing, stripped down approach when all they need to do is essentially localize their full fat apps to the needs of what everyone wants. And let's be honest here. This isn't the first time they've tried. And it's kind of obvious that the first time around it didn't quite work out. And to me, the biggest sticking point, aside from the strategy of the next billion users apparently being, you know, special little snowflakes who need something different, is the fact that I don't think many OEMs are selling smartphones with 512 megabytes and 1 gigabyte of RAM anymore.
Yeah.
Everything's moved at least 2 gigs plus. And the way Google's been positioning itself is talking about built-in data management. Yeah, that's kind of relevant in the pre-Geo era. Post-Geo era, we're at a point where people are aware of how much data they get. And I think as something we were discussing prior to the podcast, Pranay mentioned that, yeah, I mean, 150 rupees gets you a pretty decent data plan. So, fine. Granted, this is a short-term thing. But at the end of the day, this quote-unquote short-term thing is going to have people hooked on to data.
Yeah.
And will... I'm just trying to figure out who's this for, who's this relevant. I mean, I'm sure Google have an internal presentation tucked away explaining a romanticized situation where people in the villages have their smartphone and it's their only path to modernization, all that nonsense. But at the end of the day, we have access to better data. We have access to better hardware. The software seems to be pulling us back now. It seems to be that kind of situation.
Yeah, so there are a bunch of points here which I would like to raise. First is that Android Oreo Go, if it is so important, then why doesn't it release at the same time as the full Android Oreo?
Exactly.
Yeah, so if the next billion users are what you're targeting, then why don't you like come at them at the same time? Secondly, it all depends on how manufacturers implement this Android Oreo Go, because once this goes into the hands of any manufacturer, what they are going to do is add their own bloatware, which is something that Google has not been able to stop in all these years. And when they tried to do it, when they tried to launch those Android One phones, unfortunately, that plan failed. Yeah. So that is something that, you know, we all have to keep in mind.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are one or two good things that could come out of this, like Files Go. I like the fact that they're allowing you to share stuff on a local network created through your devices that's faster than Bluetooth. Yeah. I think that's still relevant. I mean, no matter how fast your data is, it's always easier to share contacts or share data locally. So that's always cool. And I mean, yeah, bringing the Google Assistant to more devices is always nice as well.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know. I mean, as Pranay said, right? How genuine are they about this when you're going to get it essentially 3 to 6 months later? And at the same time, a decent chunk of that audience would have probably migrated to devices that don't even fit the spec for Android Go to begin with.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And also, like, if you notice that what you said, 3 to 6 months later is when we can expect people to start getting these phones, right? Yeah. So even if, like, we take a more optimistic estimate and say that by January somebody will launch a phone with Android Oreo Go at 4,500 rupees or 4,000 rupees and people will love it or whatever. Yeah. By the time that phone reaches a vast majority of the people out there, Android P is going to be out.
Exactly.
So yeah. Then you are constantly stuck in this cycle of being 1 year behind the latest Android version.
Yeah.
So for this program to work, in my humble opinion, Google needs to have it out at the same time as the full Android version releases. And it needs to partner with manufacturers to ensure that phones with that Android P Go version are available on the same day.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point that PP has there when, you know, so where it kind of makes it usable for other manufacturers, where, because if you are going to delay the Go edition by 6 months or, you know, 3 months of the official launch, it doesn't make sense. And at the same time, you have things like Project Treble that they've introduced on Oreo, wherein it enables manufacturers to ship updates out faster. And that is what Android, a lot of people are looking forward to in Android, so that, you know, their phones are updated to the latest versions without having issues. So if the Go edition, which is already skimmed down, because when you look at the Go edition, they haven't, it's kind of bare bones. So there isn't really much to work on. So they could have just launched it alongside Oreo, or probably waited till Android P was launched and launched it alongside it, so that, you know, it's more relevant and it you get the message through to people that there are two different specs. And this is the main difference between the two. Because currently people might just think that this is a completely different version of Android called Android Oreo Go.
Exactly. That also does tend to happen. I mean, I can very well picture a situation where someone walks into a store asking for the cheapest Android phone they can find, shown one model with Android O, shown another with Android O Go, and both parties, the salespeople and the people and the customers, don't know what's the difference.
Yeah.
It's quite possible. And it's just going to be fun to see how this pans out, because if you look at how other big tech companies have gone around this, if you look at Apple's approach, I mean, sure, not the best example because Apple's price point's a lot higher, is that they're more than happy to let older versions be available on the market for a lower price. I mean, now, till today, you can still pick up an iPhone 6S on Flipkart, Amazon. And even if you look at Nokia back in the day, Nokia's approach was two-pronged, where you had feature phones for the low end and the Windows-powered smartphones for the high end. And even if you look at Nokia now, Nokia's lower-end smartphones are still around that 5,000-7,000 range. And you have the higher-end smartphones for a higher-end audience.
Yeah.
But the problem here is you have Google trying to tackle both hardware and software at the same time. And if you compare it to, let's say, Facebook, who's basically ensured that there's a separate light app in addition to Facebook's full-fat experience, it puts them in a bit of a situation as well. I mean, you can understand. And at the end of the day, it just makes Google come off as, well, fragmented. And that's the worrying thing. I mean, I get it that, yes, you're trying to balance both the needs of hardware and software, but I just feel that it's a little weird to say, it's a little presumptuous to say that the needs of the next 1 billion are drastically different, that you need this approach. Yeah. It just doesn't seem to be warranted at this stage. More so when OEMs have been doing a decent job about it in quieter ways. I mean, we've seen Xiaomi bring in their ITR feature on MIUI 9. You've seen localization efforts on OS as well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It just seems to be a situation where, hey, we're here and we're relevant.
Yeah. No, because when you look at their description of Android Oreo Go Edition, there are two points that they've said, that the OS has got built-in data management features, and the second is security benefits. Now, when it comes to built-in data management, it kind of gives us the impression that every search or every query that you send to the internet will probably be requested on a Google server, which will compress it and then send it to you, which kind of is like Google has all your data.
Access
to a lot Android more. Anyway, yeah, so what are you expecting? Yeah.
So a bit more probably, like, other than stuff that it would get only from Chrome browser or something of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, even when you don't use Google services, basically.
Yeah, even
but
if
at this point, I should also, like, once again point out that we are not sure about this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a wild theory.
Yeah.
But it does sound like that if Google is doing the data management for you.
Yeah.
But then how much of it is really required in this day and age in India? Like, Google would like to say that, yeah, these are all features for India first and not, America first and then coming to India. But in today's India, like in India where now we have Airtel, Jio, Vodafone, all of them offering good 4G networks, you know,
and
across the
country. Crazy data packs.
And at really cheap rates. Would you be worried so much about data compression?
Yeah.
I mean, I am really not so sure. Like when we've done our podcasts on Reliance Jio, we've had our own people, like people from our own company saying that when they went to their own village in Bihar, in a random part where there was no internet or 2G at best, suddenly, you know, now you have 4G there. So if internet penetration is increasing at this rate, then how relevant is this to India?
Yeah. And speaking of Jio, though, they did announce a very specific feature for the Jio phone.
No, because, you know, before we go ahead with Jio, there's this other thing that they were talking about security benefits. And that is something I'm curious about, because it's good if Google pushes the security updates, because if you leave it to the manufacturers, we know that, you know, they're going to be quite late when it comes to releasing
patches.
It's
never going to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty much never going to happen. Like for a 4,000 rupee phone, I don't think any manufacturer has, you know, bothered pushing out security updates. Like it'll be very rare.
It's a two-pronged problem. One is that like the phone is way too low-end for them to bother.
Yeah.
Secondly, like they're just worried that the inferior hardware in the phone will actually end up slowing down,
the overall experience for the user.
I mean, and when the phone has like 16 GB internal storage,
these phones will have like 8 GB of internal storage probably.
Yeah. So space problems are also a big issue.
So, Rishi.
Yeah.
While you were on the topic of Jiophone.
Yeah, so they're bringing Google Assistant coming to Jiophone. To me, that was the coolest announcement, simply because it shows that Google's willing to go beyond the Android ecosystem to actually cater to the people.
Yeah, now all we need is Siri on the Jiophone and the ecosystem will be complete.
Bixby first.
Yeah, okay.
Bixby and Samsung Pay both.
Yeah.
But then what's interesting here is, I think not less than 6 months ago, Reliance showed off the Jiophone with its own smart assistant, right?
Yeah.
So then, now the question is, if you're a Jiophone user, which one do you use?
Because Jiophone had its own assistant called Hello Jio, which basically you can trigger and ask it to do stuff. And it functions pretty much like the assistant, where it will take your voice command, send it to the server to process, and then execute it. But two assistants on a feature phone is kind of an overkill, because the thing is, for the Google Assistant to perform to its fullest, it needs Google Apps and its entire framework, which makes it what it is. Whereas there's no Google Apps on the Jiophone, so I'm not sure what will it be used for.
Or this could possibly be Google's way of Trojan horsing itself into the Jiophone, you start small, start piecemeal with Google Assistant. Before you know it, you're running Google Docs and the entire nine yards. But what's interesting is what this means for Jio in general, because if we're seeing Google being able to roll out a customized assistant, what's stopping WhatsApp from showing up? What's stopping from other apps showing up?
Yeah.
And that to me is a very interesting situation, because it means that the next billion users may not even need Android to begin with.
Yeah, so I'm just like, my guess would be for this is that it's probably just a matter of optimizing it and wondering whether you'll get enough returns on that. So clearly Google thinks that having Google Assistant there will give it a bunch of users and a bunch of data. Mm. But I'm pretty certain that at this point, WhatsApp is probably not convinced that investing in this app and maintaining it separately for Jiophone, which is running on a platform that only Jiophone is running at this point. Yeah, like it probably is not worth the investment.
No, there's one other obscure phone from Verizon as well, but yeah, two phones.
No, because if you think about it, Google will have to build the assistant for KaiOS, because that's what the Jiophone runs on. So
yeah.
I'm not sure like the extent to which Google will go to build it and maintain
but
it for
KaiOS. But what are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, don't you think that it could probably just be a web wrapper of some sort, this thing? Like all it has to do is send data to the internet and then deliver an output back.
I mean, that could work, because we did get Twitch to run on a Jiophone.
Yeah, exactly. So my guess would be that something like that is what they're doing.
Or just another theory, there's one Jiophone running Android coming.
That would be really cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah, and it's also interesting, not entirely implausible either.
You'll have WhatsApp running on it, Google Assistant with a few features. If it's running on Android, I don't think that'll be much of an issue.
Hopefully that's not effectively free, because I'm really tired of all that marketing jargon.
But wait, if a Jiophone's running Android, it's called life. okay, now's the time I drop the mic and walk off stage.
Cool. So on that note, I think we should conclude this episode of Orbital. And
or do you want to bring up Taze?
No.
What? What's Taze?
Yeah.
Oh, so no, they hit 140 million transactions from 12 million active users, and there are
after paying billions of cashback.
Mm. There we go. Yes, yeah. That's the important thing. So, guys, for those of you listening in, if you're still wondering about Taze and how big it is or useful it is, keep this in mind that a lot of people who have been using it mainly to get cashbacks.
Yeah.
And apparently, there's a scheme running where you could get percentage back of your money. So what people would do was they transfer to their own accounts and get the money back.
Wow.
Yeah, that was happening. I know a few friends who did that.
Yeah, so anyway, I wouldn't really like put much stock in initial growth of apps like this.
True.
Like 1 year down the line, we'll see if this growth is sustainable.
Yeah.
And also the figures that Google has given, they're all like something like Google Taze has these many users and not these many daily active users.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
So that kind of tells you that, don't believe all the numbers you see. We'll see 1 year down the line how many active users Taze has and how many merchants are using it regularly.
Hmm.
Then only will we be able to pass some kind of a judgment. Yeah?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, we'll see the launch of UPI version 2, which will actually make it much easier for merchants to accept payments from you via UPI. So once that happens, a lot of these apps, the likes of PhonePe, Bheem, and Google Taze, they should see some growth.
Well, I'm actually waiting for Android Pay to be launched in India because, NFC payments are there. Like, you've got Samsung Pay, which does MST and NFC as well.
True.
So, I don't know what's stopping Google from getting Android Pay to India because it's already there in other countries.
I think it's a critical mass situation. But then a counter argument being that, and this is something we've heard from Samsung themselves, is at least with Samsung Pay, one in every two users who's using Samsung Pay is using it on an S8 or higher.
Yeah.
So it's definitely so far restricted to the high end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And even then, the daily and monthly active, as Pranay said, is quite more or less a black box.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a question of that. And while initiatives like Taze and Bheem and UPI actually help people to consider what a digital wallet is, I still think we have ways to go.
Yeah, and I think Google Taze is Android Pay for India.
Yeah.
As far as we are concerned, it works everywhere pretty much, right?
Yeah.
And with UPI V2, I think it will see some growth. But until then, I really wouldn't take any numbers very seriously at this point. Yeah. So I think that's about it for this episode of Orbital. And we will see you with another episode next week. As always, if you have any questions, comments or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. We take time, we read all your emails and we try to answer as many of them as possible. If you could leave us a rating on iTunes, that would really help us a lot. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube and Instagram @gadgets360. Thank you so much for listening.